This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's a segment wherein we answer your questions about all and sundry. You can email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com gets you through, and please make your question succinct and of general relevance to our audience. So we reserve the right to edit questions or sometimes if they're not on target, not to select them at all. But chances are you will get through. So radioprogram@AOL.com. And how you doing, Layla?
I'm okay. How are you, Dr. Hoffman?
Good, good, good. But a lot of people, actually I do a little segment on the Doug Steffen show every week. That's a nationally syndicated radio show. And I mean, I'm sort of like do like a little 3 or 4 minute segment brought in as the medical expert. And the question of the day was about natural treatment for allergies, and allergies are really exploding here in the Northeast with the advent of spring. And all of a sudden, last week it was upon us with the first 70 plus day, and the trees are blooming, and they're putting a lot of pollen in the air. A lot of people are suffering. They're having eye burning, and they're having cough, and the nasal congestion, and sometimes it's a sort of a general sense of malaise. They're not well.
Yeah.
So,
immune system's overacting, and we're tired because of it.
Unexplained fatigue, even sometimes body aches, can be associated with just a general allergic state. So, if you're feeling a little under the weather and you're wondering why, and you think it's like May is the cruelest month, to paraphrase T.S. Eliot. April is actually the cruelest month, but that's over. Maybe it's allergy. So just before we get into questions, any general tips for alleviating allergy, natural tips? I mean, obviously people can take antihistamines, but I have to say that even the non-sedating antihistamines, occasionally, rarely I will take them. They're not really non-sedating for me. I feel, a little logy, a little out of it when I take them.
I feel knocked out by any kind of antihistamine. So I avoid them. I do like to take, when we're coming upon allergy season, especially around March, I start to take lots of quercetin.
Quercetin, yeah. And the host of the program asked me this morning, he said, wow, what's that? How do you spell it? It's kind of a peculiar spelling. Spell it for us.
It's Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is quercetin?
And quercetin is a flavanol. It's found in our produce, like in onions, in apples, and it helps to reduce the histamine reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And now quercetin, besides taking quercetin alone, it's also in a product called D-Hist.
D-Hist.
Yeah, it's got quercetin there. It's also got some nettles. Very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like to take higher amounts of vitamin C, because the higher amounts of vitamin C can act as an antihistamine.
Right.
And I'm never without my vitamin C, so.
Right. And then, in terms of other natural tips, if you are, some people are, they don't have celiac disease, they don't have a full-blown very obvious allergies to wheat or dairy or other things. But this is the time of year to be extra special careful about them. And that's my case, because I really can't get away with, I can get away with maybe a little taste of wheat or dairy here and there at other seasons. But during peak allergy season, they really take me right over the threshold to allergic symptoms. So that's where I'm extra special careful.
And what's interesting about the grains are related to grasses, so I think anybody with grass allergies do better.
Right.
Being grain-free or really reducing the amount of grains they take.
And then for other people, the tree-allergic people often are allergic to raw tree fruit or nuts, so they have to be careful about those things. But yeah, then there's some role to be played by vitamin D, I believe. I think having higher levels of vitamin D is important. And you can also take a clear nasal spray just to make sure you don't develop sinusitis. I think clear is not so much an anti-allergy thing, but it's something that prevents sinusitis from developing when you have a lot of mucus production. And the other thing is maybe
and the wonderful thing about the wonderful thing about the xylitol is it breaks up biofilms.
Right.
So
the bacteria that
bacteria can envelop themselves in.
Yes, the bacteria that live in your nasal passages. And if you think there's no bacteria in your nasal passages, the next time somebody you see somebody pick your nose, their nose, hopefully their nose, not your nose, and they offer to give you a handshake, you know, you'll know that there's probably some bacteria there that you don't want to get, right? I mean, and that's what xylitol is designed to prevent the it doesn't completely sterilize the nasal passages, nor should it, but it prevents the colonization by biofilms that leads to sinusitis. So anyway, so those are some things. You know, probiotics may play a role in this. Some people like to take some people like to take local honey. You know, like but it has to be local. You know, if you're
it's
not
kind of primes, it gets you. It's almost like taking allergy shots or something like that.
Yeah, it's homeopathic.
The raw honey idea.
It's really homeopathic because you get a very small amount of a sublingual desensitization, which is another thing we can do. Yeah. We do this at the Hoffman Center, slit sublingual desensitization. You take drops of the things that you're allergic to. So that's another thing that you can do. And then, you know, and the honey does that. But the problem is, if you know, you go to the supermarket and buy even like high premium quality honey, it may be from another part of the country. It has to be local honey that actually reflects the plant composition in your area, because if you get honey from, say, you know, you live in New York and you get honey from New Zealand or something, it only works for New Zealanders. It's not going to work for New Yorkers.
Exactly. So the best place to get honey is at your local green market, your farmer's market.
Yeah, where they, you know, they have the apiaries that are close and they, you know, they just drive a truck from, you know, within 50 miles of the green market, every weekend or every weekday when they set up shop in your green market. So those are some basic suggestions. I think that should help some people who are sufferers of allergies. So let's get to the questions that we have. I got to mention this before. Another thing is we would like to announce, this is actually the first announcement. We don't have a fanfare here, but we could have a fanfare, that we are going to resume our Hoffman Center seminars, but in a new way. We used to do them. We used to do them, and we'd get a nice crowd. You know, we might get 50, 60 people, and that was great. You know, it'd fill a lecture hall, sometimes more. But we felt, you know, that a lot of people said, yeah, you know, it's a big deal coming into New York City, or, you know, I live in New Jersey, or I live in Long Island, I live in Connecticut. I hate to, or even, you know, so now we have listeners all over the country, all over the world. And so they're not going to fly into New York for one of our seminars. So we are now going to record them, and we're going to turn them into webinars. So, but people are welcome to come in person as they have before. And those who come in person, they'll pay the fee for the seminar. And they will also be entitled to get the webinar so that they can watch it for posterity. They even might see themselves in a starring role in the webinar if they ask a question. And then and we're going to keep doing that. So that's going to reach a wider audience in 2015 and beyond. Yeah. And our topic is, once again, fanfare.
Our topic is strategies to overcome overeating, to deal with cravings, to deal with emotional eating, to break the craving, the food addiction cycle, once and for all.
Right. And that's a real news you can use kind of topic. But I have to say that as we, you know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, how much do we really know about that? But we have amassed reams of information. And the secrets of the real top professionals in this field. And we're really, this is really being honed into a new science of understanding the basis of food craving. Because, you know, I tell you something, one of the problems with a lot of the diets out there, they say, well, eat paleo, you know, eat ketogenic, eat glycemic, but they just don't take into account the food cravings that undermine people's diet resolve. And I think in any successful diet plan, we have to attack that, first and foremost. And then we can tell people, okay, here's how you eat rationally. But, you know, how are you going to present a rational program to someone who is subject to all kinds of conscious and unconscious cravings that undermine their resolve? So we have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. We have to deal with it. Absolutely. Eating is a behavior, but it's not just about that. It's also about what the food industry has done in terms of hijacking our brains with making food hyper-palatable and so forth. So it makes it very, very difficult to stop eating a certain food,
right? So
hence the craving.
Forearmed is forewarned. So we're going to arm you with information that you need to help you.
Are we releasing the date?
Yeah, we can release the date.
It's June 24th. That's a Wednesday at 6:30.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Be there. Or, we'll be providing information.
Yeah.
We'll be there. All right. So we'll provide information via drhoffman.com and in our newsletter about the upcoming event. Okay.
Right.
So,
all right.
Let's tackle some questions.
We've got a nice email from Andrew. Just some information, Dr. Hoffman. He wants you to know that the term for the plastic cap thing at the end of a shoelace is called an aglet.
An aglet. Spell it for us.
It's A-G-L-E-T. A-G-L-E-T.
Right.
So now when we talk about telomeres, this is the term that we can use.
Okay, because commonly we describe, telomeres, we say, well, let's visualize a shoelace, and that little plastic tip that keeps the shoelace from unraveling is equivalent to a telomere, because when telomeres are short, and they tend to shorten as you age, once they're used up or expended, they allow the chromosome to unravel, and then your DNA goes awry, and then all sorts of bodily functions go awry. And so the goal of a lot of anti-aging research is to keep the telomeres sound and lengthen them, in effect lengthen them. And now we know that when we use this analogy, we can talk about an aglet. That's like, and and he told us, I saw the email, he said, how do I know this? He does crossword puzzles. So that's a great crossword puzzle word, because it's like a five-letter word with weird letters. That's a really New York Times crossword puzzle kind of word, because who knows that? That's like, that's
totally
esoteric information.
Well, now we know.
Maybe shoemakers know that, but generally not.
Right.
Hey, you learn something every day here on Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you, Andrew, for that tidbit.
That's great.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
We've got an email from Destine. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My husband is 74. He is quite thin, but he has high blood pressure, which he's been taking medication for more than 15 years. Whenever I've asked the doctor what could cause this in such a thin person, I'm always told it's caused by genetics. Is this the real reason? My husband weighs 130 pounds, and he's 5 feet 6 inches tall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is it genetics?
Okay.
Or is it a matter of age at some point?
Like the movie title, it's complicated. And, whenever I see someone with high blood pressure who's thin, I always go, oh, that's bummer. Because if you have somebody who's overweight, at least that gives you a very plausible pathway to normalizing their blood pressure. Unfortunately, a lot of the people come to see us already heed our advice. And they come to us for a special, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's like, okay, lose weight. Okay, great. A lot of people do that. And then when they fail to lower their blood pressure, then they sometimes resort to us for other natural means for lowering blood pressure. So it's hypertension, literally, there are multi-volume books on hypertension. There's literally tens of thousands of articles on hypertension and its causes. And, among the causes are insulin resistance, which actually can sometimes occur in a person who seems thin. We use this term TOFI, thin outside, fat inside. So sometimes people can be insulin resistant and they're thin, ostensibly. I don't think this guy, you know, with this kind of stature is insulin resistant, but who knows? So that's, you know, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome. But also something about the functioning of the kidneys. The kidney function may be damaged by such factors as chemicals and heavy metals over time, you know, just the sort of wear and tear of life. You know, high blood pressure itself damages the kidneys, and then they become irrevocably damaged, and they can't regulate, and sometimes it's hard to turn that back. The other thing that happens is that as you age, your arteries stiffen. And this is, to some extent, a natural process because, you know, for example, that at a certain age you need reading glasses. Well, what happens is that the muscles of accommodation of your lens of your eye, they stiffen, and there's a general, you know, it's a process. You know, it's a process of, you know, overall stiffening, shall we say, of your connective tissue. And the connective tissue in your blood vessels is supposed to be flexible and supple, but sometimes it stiffens. And, you know, you get hardening the arteries. Yeah. That's something that happens.
Vitamin C can help that.
Absolutely. You know, look,
I'm on a vitamin C kick today.
There's all kinds of nutrition interventions, and it sort of depends on the subtype of high blood pressure you have. And so,
right. I mean, arterial elasticity, for instance, that could be something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Arterial elasticity, kidney function. Also, you know, we believe that, you know, the composition of the diet can sometimes cause water retention, which can send blood pressure up. You know, there's a multiplicity of factors that are involved in blood pressure. You know, prostaglandins and prostanoids, you know, that are responsible for inflammation also govern blood pressure. And by taking omega-3 fatty acids and reducing your omega-6s, you can sometimes alter blood pressure. So, you know, and I got to say, I think natural medicine is fantastic. But there are some people who've gone beyond the point of no return in their blood pressure. They really do require, unfortunately, and it's not a merit system. They may do everything virtuously. They may be on a raw foods, vegan diet, and exercise, you know, 2 hours a day and meditate. And although that's likely to normalize blood pressure, there are, unfortunately, some hardcore people who still have high blood pressure, and they still require a little bit of medication to keep them safe. So I'm not inalterably opposed to medication for blood pressure. Plus, frankly, some people can't commit to that kind of, you know, very, very rigorous lifestyle. You know, they're subject to stress. They you know, they're not saints. They can't, you know, they're not, you know, Tibetan monks, you know, or Buddhist.
They could be Type A.
Yeah, you know, Buddhist adept meditators. And, you know, they're subject to those factors, and the early lifestyle may have caused them to go past the point of no return in their blood pressure. And then, you know, heavy metals play a role in this. They're definitely cadmium in particular, but also lead raises blood pressure. And we're all exposed to that. Perhaps some of the chemicals we're exposed to may cause some damage to our kidneys, making our kidneys not function normally.
Oh, boy. Best of luck, Justine.
Well, you know,
husband to continue taking his blood pressure meds.
But it doesn't mean that some sort of natural intervention that we could figure out might enable him to be on less meds or no meds. It just means that the weight loss route is denied to him because that's not happening.
Right, right. But I think it's still beneficial to take something like citrulline, maybe arginine, olive leaf.
That's the nitric oxide connection. Yeah, the nitrates. Super beets may have a good effect on blood pressure. This is one of our good sponsors because it harnesses the nitric oxide connection that dilates blood vessels. I mean, these are, you know, things like all these many, many different types of things.
Okay. All right. Our next question, very straightforward, comes from Walter.
Yeah.
About ginkgo biloba.
Yeah.
Is it harmful or not? Can it cause a bleed out?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well,
if you take the whole bottle, that's not a good thing.
So there are a few case reports of people developing hemorrhages from ginkgo biloba. But they invariably occur when people are taking other things, like aspirin. And the hemorrhages are usually like in the eye. you know, like bleeding in the eye that can damage the retina. You know, it's hard to separate out. Is it the ginkgo or is it the aspirin? Because there's plenty of people who come. I mean, there are tens of thousands of people who come to harm by taking aspirin, even low-dose aspirin every year. So then that doesn't get a lot of case reports. But if someone is taking aspirin and ginkgo biloba, the doctor will pounce on it and say, aha, the ginkgo biloba is what the, you know, that was the culprit.
Yeah, and, instead of pouncing on the aspirin.
It's not fair. It's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, supplement profiling. it's a supplement. You know, let's look out for that. See that supplement? Supplement's walking down the street. What's he doing there? Arrest him. That kind of thing. So that's, you know, ginkgo biloba is a platelet. It's a platelet inhibitor.
Yeah.
It's a PAF inhibitor, platelet activating factor inhibitor. So it has a slight blood thinning effect. But PAF is also instrumental in asthma, for example. And so ginkgo can actually be helpful in asthmatics. Platelet activating factor doesn't just act on platelets. It also has an impact on conditions like asthma. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It could be good for brain health. For inner ear health,
yes,
because it helps with circulation.
You know what it also helps with?
All of that is good.
You know, it's actually been documented. It helps altitude sickness. And how I found this out? Yeah, how I found this out is that I was skiing in Colorado, and I was at the, you know, they have cafes at different levels. They have a cafe down at the base, and they have a cafe in the middle, and they had the highest cafe, the very highest cafe, where you know where you would go for refreshments after, you know, taking some real high altitude runs. And they were serving ginkgo tea. Ginkgo tea.
Oh.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, what's up with that? You know, is this to make you smarter when you're skiing? You know, it's like, because it's difficult. You know, these are difficult slopes.
You don't crash into any trees.
You won't crash or you'll remember the trails. You have a better memory of so that you don't get lost. And no, the answer is, I subsequently found out, was that it helps to acclimate to altitude. And this has actually been demonstrated in some studies where they took students and they took them up to Pike's Peak, which is a, you know, altitude increase, like whatever, you know, 9, 10, 11,000 feet. And what's interesting about that is you can go from a fairly flat level up to there quickly. So it really is a way to study altitude sickness. And some people are more genetically prone to that. Some of us are flatlanders and some of us are mountaineers in our genes. But the ones who had taken ginkgo were less likely to get altitude sickness. So there is an outcome because it enhances brain circulation, which is precisely what is affected when you have less oxygen. Yeah. That's how you get altitude sickness. Yeah. There's some people are very sensitive to desaturation of oxygen in their bloodstream, and ginkgo might help that. You know where else ginkgo might help? And it's in sickle cell anemia, because that's the same kind of situation where you get, these are people who can't go to altitude because they will have crises. They'll have sickling crises when they go to altitude. Or alternatively, sometimes with exertion, you know, that they don't oxygenate their tissues properly, and that the cells clump together, and it's horrible. But ginkgo may play a role in that kind of condition. So, you know, is ginkgo dangerous? I think it's minimally dangerous. I think it's probably one of the things we would say stop taking right before surgery. It's on our list of don't take right before surgery. Which, by the way, I have to write another article on that, because that's such a popular request that I think I want to update that article. So maybe you and I can collaborate on an update of that article, Supplements for Surgery, because people really ask about that all the time. I mean, it's scarcely a show that goes by. It almost gets to be a litany where we don't get a question. Well, I'm about to have this or that or the other show. You know, tell me what to take, what not to take. And so we can, and ginkgo is on, ginkgo, garlic, fish oil. These are things maybe to avoid right before surgery.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
We're coming to the point where we want to divide our podcast into two parts. We generally go two segments. So if you're listening, please fast forward to part two, and give us a little preview of part two, Lila.
What is your view of AMPK?
Wow. Okay. We're going to have to put our science,
tell you what that is.
Our science caps on the hot new supplement, AMPK. It's actually not a supplement. It's a principle.
Yeah.
That a new supplement is designed to augment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today with Layla Mutin, this is our weekly Q&A. You're listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Please join us for part two.